There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
NFL Live, and then there were two. Are the league's two undefeated teams on a collision course to meet in Miami? The Patriots and 49ers remain undefeated after 8 weeks. Thumb surgery, what thumb surgery? Drew Brees is back, doesn't miss a beat as the Saints roll past the Cardinals. We'll talk about what's next. Von Orleans and J.J. Watt suffering a season-ending injury. The Texans star defensive end will have surgery on a torn pectoral muscle that could sideline him for the next 4 months. We're happy to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. I'm Wendy Nix, Chris Mortensen, Ryan Clark, and Tim Hasselbeck. Just over 24 hours now into the NFL's trade deadline, we will talk about what to expect. Adam Schefter will join us coming up in just a little bit. But we start with an interesting move out of Denver. Joe Flacco critical of the team's play calling and their loss to the Chargers over the weekend. Today, Flacco ruled out with the neck injury. Up next for the Broncos, the Browns. Here's head coach Vic Fangio.
We're now a 2-6 football team, and we're like afraid to go for it in a 2-minute drill. You know, like who cares if you give the ball back to the guys with a minute and 40 seconds left? They obviously got the field goal anyway. Once again, we're a 2-6 football team, and it just feels like we're kind of afraid to lose a game. It's 3rd and 5 at the end of the game. You know, it's who cares if they have a timeout there at the end or not? What do we have to lose? Like, why can't we be aggressive in some of these situations?
Well, clearly that was actually Flacco after the game. I mentioned he was critical of the play calling, and that's exactly what he had to say. A lot of that stuff you typically want to keep in-house. Anyway, you look at it, though, he's not going to play. The coach was asked if IR was a possibility. He said not today anyway, Mort, but an interesting decision.
Well, if he has a neck injury, and they're saying he does, and he may have suffered the neck injury in-game, or maybe he took it into the game, or maybe after the press conference. Now, I'm not trying to be that big of a smart aleck, because if he has a significant neck injury, it's not
clearly
to make
you have
fun
to tread lightly.
But that was post-game, that press conference. And so clearly he must have had something happen in the game that they examined today to make this decision to put him on the sidelines and to start Brandon Allen in this next game against the Browns.
It's unacceptable. I mean, for me, I'll just be honest. I think
what he said.
Yeah. Not that he's wrong. I happen to agree with Joe Flacco in terms of game management, but it's just unacceptable to have your quarterback, who most of the time is one of the leader, probably all the time, is one of the leaders on your football team, to be so publicly critical of your team strategy at the end of the game. If you don't like it, go talk to your coach about it. Airing it that way is no different than a receiver complaining that he's not getting the ball enough, or you know, he's not involved more, he's not getting enough targets, or any of that stuff. I think it's completely out of bounds for a quarterback to do something like that. And, you know, if it has something to do with why they think it makes sense to have him out, I would end up agreeing with it.
Well, having said that, though, if that's the case, and you say it's totally unacceptable, I think you probably have a lot of people who agree with you. Why not then say, if you're Denver, if in fact this is punitive in any way, this is a decision based in part because of what he said.
I'll be honest. You know, I was kind of giggling earlier because you do think that this is curious timing for sure. And then when you see Joe Flacco after the game, he didn't look like someone who seemed injured in that way. We obviously saw the last play of the game. He was actually hit and fumbled the ball. And so it could have happened on that play. He was hit from behind by somebody. So I'm not laughing at that, but it is just curious timing, and it's funny how these things happen. You go on after the game and you say all of these things about clock management, and you say these things about taking chances, and you speak about being a 2-6 team. Guess what? You're the quarterback of that 2-6 team. And coming into this game, you were 2-5, and you were the quarterback then, and it's been some of your play that has gotten your team to this point. So sometimes you have to be accountable for those things as well. And I'm with Tim. It's unacceptable to do this to your team, to do this to your coach. And now it works out that you say these things about the other people in your locker room, and you're not even going to be on the field for the next game?
I just know this. If a player goes into a coach, doesn't matter if it's a safety that goes to a coach and is like, hey, coach, we got to stop bringing so much pressure, need more help in the back end, or we need to bring more pressure. The coaches are like, you know what? Like, I'm going to work with this guy. If that's what the players want, I'm going to work with him. I think if a quarterback goes to a head coach or a play caller and is like, look, we're in these situations. We're 2-6. Let's be more aggressive. I can almost promise you that they are more aggressive than that because guys want to work together on this stuff. When you do it that way,
right,
it doesn't work. It divides. And I think that that's why it's just dead wrong.
Yeah, and I also think, too, there's no way that a coach – cannot be on the defensive now. If I'm Vic Fangio, if I'm one of the players in that locker room, now I have to point the finger back at you. It's not a conversation that if, like Tim says, you come to me in my office, I can say, you know what, you're probably right. We should be more aggressive here. We should be more aggressive there. Now you have to point to him and say, okay, what are you doing to make this team better?
Well, if you care about winning, Morton, you know this, then you're looking for solutions. And at the end of the day, did this make it better? Did this help that team find a solution? And ultimately, I think we can all agree the answer is no, therefore not the way to do it.
I can't argue with former players. Former players.
Super former.
Super former. Brandon Allen will step in. He will start for the Broncos again. They will play the Browns. Another Allen will also start. Ron Rivera announcing today, and he did this last Monday as well, that Kyle Allen will start again for the Carolina Panthers. Rivera said that Cam Newton remains right in the middle of his rehab process, so no change there. Kyle Allen, of course, went out to San Francisco, suffered his first loss of the season as the starting quarterback, but he, Mort, will get the nod once again for Carolina.
Yes, he will, and some people wonder, well, now that they've stopped that winning streak of his because he'd been unbeaten as a starter, that maybe it was time for Cam. Well, obviously, Cam's not ready, and losing to the 49ers seems to be a problem for every quarterback this year. They haven't been beaten yet.
That's right. There's two undefeated teams, which we talked about. We will look more closely at the 49ers and the Patriots coming up. I also mentioned that tomorrow marks the trade deadline, 4 o'clock Eastern to be exact, and then after that it all changes. So some teams trying to get things done under the buzzer. The Jets have traded Leonard Williams to the Giants for a 3 this year and a 5 in the 2021 draft. However, that fifth-round pick, according to our Adam Schefter and sources, say the Giants, it will become a fourth-round pick if Williams signs a contract extension before the start of the league year. The Jets paying $4 million of Williams' $6 million salary this season. And you don't often see this, but again, going from the Giants, I mean the Jets to the Giants.
Yeah, actually, it's the first trade done between these two New York teams. And now, trades, there's already been 17 trades coming into this trade weekend, deadline weekend, because the NFL salary caps are bigger, more flexible. You can do these type of trades. It's just interesting that the Jets and Giants, for the first time, have executed this trade. And the Giants wanted some defensive line help. Now, this is the last year of his contract. And the Jets want draft picks. They've got to rebuild their whole offensive line and then some.
Right. Yeah, I think the Jets see this as a move toward the future. You get to draft Quinnen Williams early on in last year's draft, so you feel like you have some stout young players there, along with Steve McClendon, who's a captain of this football team. And Leonard Williams has been a name that we've heard for a while now that would be on the trade market. And I think for him, the best thing is you don't have to move. You know, at least you can still stay in your house and get to practice and get to where you need to be. But the New York Giants obviously wanted to add some talent up front. Maybe they wanted to get some pressure that they can put into the quarterback's face because his defense has been so poor this season, and Leonard Williams is a big-time talent.
Not moving is key, although the NFL does pay for your move when you get traded. You get cut.
So you still get that money.
When you get cut and signed.
You know, I didn't know that.
You're on your own.
Listen.
When you get traded.
Tim knows this.
Little relocation for you. Actually, anyway.
But, how many times did it happen?
But it didn't happen to me, but it happened to family members. Anyway, it's an interesting move from the Giants' perspective. It's just interesting in that you have an upside player that goes to and stays in the same city for a different organization. That's a little bit unique. But it's also kind of, I think, typical of what Dave Gettleman probably wants to do.
Yeah.
Be strong on the defensive line. You look at the history of the New York Giants. When they have been good, going back to the 80s, they've been good on their defensive front. And I think when you look at some of the success they've had, it's been with drafting guys or even signing guys in free agency at defensive tackle, at defensive end, and they're not great there right now. And so I think it's an effort to improve in that area.
Well, if you just look at the most successful teams in the NFL, for the most part, we always talk about it. You better be strong on both sides of the line, offensive line and defensive line. So certainly Dave Gettleman, we know he likes to call these guys hog mollies, generally for the offensive line. But, yeah, they need defensive line help, too. And it looks like they hit on Dexter Lawrence, their first-round pick, on the defensive line as well. So it's just adding to that.
Also news for the Jets. The hits just keep on coming. Adam Gase has announced that C.J. Mosley is out 5 to 6 weeks. So not the season they wanted to start off his career with the New York Jets. Different story altogether for the Patriots. Things are going just fine in Foxborough. In fact, they are one of two undefeated teams remaining. And here we go. It was this time a rainy, windy win over the Cleveland Browns in Foxborough. The Browns were coming off a bye. They fall to 2-5. It's Sunday's win, a milestone for Bill Belichick. He achieved 300 wins and an elite club.
You know, it's a great privilege to coach this team and to coach the guys that I've coached throughout my career. Fortunately, I didn't play in any of those games. That's a good thing for us. But I've had a lot of good players, a lot of great players. And, you know, they're the ones that win the games.
Yeah, he's an absolute beast. And you always feel like you have a shot to win a game with him, you know, at the lead. You know, he's the best coach to ever do it. And I think in any sport, it's getting there.
You know, I couldn't name one thing that I did 300 times. And for him to get 300 wins at this level, you know, I think he says it a lot. And about, you know, how hard it is to win in this league. And for him to do it 300 times in the way that he's done it is partially suspicious.
You know, just proud of him, everything he's accomplished. And, you know, amazing to think that he coached for another place and they didn't think he was good enough. You know, and then he comes here and does a great job. So it's a great celebration for him and certainly hard-earned, well-deserved, and only better than 300 is 301. So we'll be back at it this week.
They are on to the next week. So Belichick joins Don Shula and George Halas as the only coaches in NFL history with 300 wins. That includes the playoffs. If he, that's Bill Belichick, averages 12 wins a year, he'd break Shula's record of 347 midway through the 2023 season. It sounds like a lot, but if you include the postseason, the Patriots have won at least 12 games every season this decade, which is just unbelievable. On this Overreaction Monday, here's where we will start. Belichick will break Shula's record. Tim, is that an overreaction?
It's not an overreaction. Before you even said that includes postseason wins, I was going to say it's not an overreaction. I mean, you're talking
right.
About 12 wins a year. Well, I'm good at math, Wendy. That's in 4 years from now he's going to end up breaking it. I mean, the reality is that, like, I can't really see him coaching less than 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I think guys like Bill Belichick, like,
what's he going to do?
They love it.
He's not that good health.
It's baked into their life. And then I think the other aspect of it is that it's what they know how to do. They're in such a routine with it. You heard the guys calling the game on Sunday talking about Belichick saying, like, he doesn't even have it's not like he has a menu, like a call sheet.
Right.
He's doing this.
he just knows it. Right.
He's been doing it for so long, he just knows it. And so for him, like, I think there's such a routine of, like, that's the routine of his life. Like, I don't know why he would stop. He's coaching with his son right now.
Sons.
So I think when you look at it that way, I can't imagine he coaches for less than 5 years.
It's not an overreaction for me. And did that look like a man that was content and satisfied on 300?
Was 300. It more? Yeah, but are you going to be satisfied with 347?
When you have somebody who is this focused on week to week and that focused on just getting the win of the next game that's at hand, it doesn't seem too big. It doesn't seem so long term because he's taking this thing as it goes. And like Tim said, when you do the math, it almost seems too easy to say that this isn't an overreaction. And I played under Coach Dick LeBeau, who coached into his 80s. And I think he's one of the greatest football minds I've ever been around. But that kept him That kept him vibrant. Yes. That kept him alive. Like he would walk into that building with more excitement than we would every single day because he was doing what he loved and he felt it a privilege to do that. When I look at Bill Belichick, it seems the same way with him to me. And as long as he's on that sideline and coaching a team, you know they're going to be well prepared. You know they're going to be disciplined and you know they're going to be motivated to win. So I can't see him in any way not breaking this record.
It's not an overreaction because there's nothing to suggest he's lost his passion for his work.
Right.
And you mentioned he works with his sons now,
yep.
too.
Right.
And I think he's enjoying that part of it. But listen, Tom Brady will not play for them one day, and Bill will still be coaching. Mm-hmm. So he's not – just because Tom Brady retires, say he retires next year or after this year or 2 years from now, I still think Belichick coaches beyond that.
I agree.
Because there's a part of him just loves the game, loves to teach the game. And anybody who's probably been at one of his practices or watched him coach understands just how much passion
he has. Well,
I'm
going to tell you what. You definitely can't read his face and figure. You definitely can't read his face and figure out that he enjoys it,
or his tone, for that matter.
Name that Belichick tune.
That is one of my favorite games we play. I might add, and even Teddy gets those wrong sometimes. Can't tell win or loss. Well, I mentioned the Patriots clearly undefeated, led by Bill Belichick. So too are the San Francisco 49ers, and that leads to this: they really could be on a collision course to February, according to ESPN's Football Power Index. There is nearly a 23% chance New England and San Francisco face off in Super Bowl 54. No other matchup is above 15%. The Patriots involved in each of the three likeliest matchups as they seek their fourth straight trip to the Super Bowl. We say hello right now to Lisa Salters from the Steel City. And it's been talked about, Lisa, as one of the most talked about injuries, actually, for Mason Rudolph. He was knocked out cold by Ravens safety Earl Thomas in week five. And actually, if you watch it in slow motion, it's tough to watch. Uh-huh. How is Mason Rudolph?
Yeah, those were scary moments. We all remember seeing it. But I had a chance to talk to Mason Rudolph this weekend. And he told me he feels great. That hit was just over 3 weeks ago. And Rudolph said that he actually felt fine within a couple of days afterwards, but he sat out the next game as a precaution, and then the Steelers had their bye. He said it just looked a lot worse than it was. He says he's not worried about something like that happening again. In fact, he's actually looking forward, he said, to absorbing that first hit tonight just to prove to people that he can take it. This will be just the fourth career start for his career, which is why Mike Tomlin said it's way too early to know what they really have in their second-year quarterback. He said everyone wants to write Mason Rudolph's career story right now, but he said he just needs more data. Wendy?
Meanwhile, the Dolphins sit at 0-6. They've traded several veterans for draft picks, including Kenyon Drake, today. That makes it tough. How does that current locker room find motivation on nights like tonight?
Yeah, I had a really good conversation with Ryan Fitzpatrick last night, and he said, if there's any question about the Dolphins tanking, consider this. He said, I'm the starting quarterback on this team, and I'm giving it everything that I have each and every week. Question answered. Still, the Dolphins know that they won't be fighting for a playoff spot this season after starting the way that they have. So I asked Fitzpatrick what the motivation really is. And he said, we have a lot of talented guys on this team, and I want to give them confidence that they can play in this league and give them opportunities for them to showcase what they can do. Fitz says he still enjoys being out there and thinks his guys can feed off of him and play more freely than they have so far. So I look for the Dolphins to really air it out tonight, Wendy. After all, like, what do they have to lose?
Well, Lisa, you're absolutely right. Thank you. And Lisa talks about one Fitz. I'll ask you about another Fitz. Minkah Fitzpatrick, as we talk about the Steelers first, has made an impact. What have you seen what he's done?
One, it's been about dependability. Yeah, he's the guy that's played free safety for this team. He's made open field tackles. He's gotten his hands on balls. And this is from the first week against the San Francisco 49ers. There was a forced fumble and an interception as soon as he came over. This team has also moved to more zone coverage that has him in the middle of the field, that gives him an opportunity to see the quarterback and make plays. He's a guy who had 6 interceptions in 1 year at the University of Alabama, and we're seeing that type of pedigree show up. He can play corner. He can play inside at the nickel positions, which I think is the best position
for him. And he can blitz off that.
But he's been doing a great job at free safety for this team, and they've become a better defense because of it.
With Fitzpatrick starting for the Dolphins, it would seem, we don't know for sure, that Miami has seen all they want to see of Josh Rosen, which is really tough given the hand he was dealt. Has it been a fair evaluation if that's the case, Tim?
No, it hasn't. But And that doesn't mean that Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't the best guy to start for right. the Miami Dolphins. I actually probably believe that he is because of the way he plays. And, you know, Josh Rosen doesn't play that way. I think Josh Rosen has a chance to be successful if he's protected and surrounded by good talent, which is the case for a lot of quarterbacks. It's been, you know, listen, life isn't fair. I mean, it's just the reality of it. And so.
Oh, really?
True, Mort, you know, but.
Mort thought it was.
I think. And so I think for him, like, not everyone is going to walk into a great situation, have great coaching, and, you know, and be given, you know, multiple good opportunities to prove that you can play. But between Arizona and what happened there, and with what's happened in Miami, let's face it, they've traded away their good players.
Right.
That's what they've done. And so I think it's hard for any quarterback to play well under those circumstances. And so, you know, Brian Flores has basically said, yeah, we've seen what we needed to see, you know, from Josh Rosen. And while there might be some truth to it for the team this year, I don't think it necessarily means that that's the case for Josh Rosen and his career, because I think he could be successful elsewhere.
Unless things change, we do know you have to have mobility. Unless you're Tom Brady and you're so savvy, but to get be Tom Brady, you got to play in the league a lot of years. And I think that limited mobility does affect him in terms of being able to play with a team that
with
isn't so strong
talent.
Around
it. I think it's a great point. And, you know, you look at Tom Brady yesterday. How many times did he throw the ball at the feet of somebody to avoid a sack? You know, Tony Romo calling the game and saying, hey, that's good football. And he's right. That is good football.
He can do that, though.
He can do that.
Josh Rosen can't. Yep. And so that's a great point, Mark, because you kind of have to prove your toughness first, your willingness to hang in there.
Absolutely.
But it's hard to be successful.
And the other thing I think that's hurt Josh Rosen, you mentioned the way that Fitzpatrick plays. The one thing that he does is he brings energy. Josh Rosen isn't necessarily an energy guy. And so even though Ryan Fitzpatrick might not be playing the cleanest football game from the quarterback position, when you look at it, when you watch it, this team looks different. It moves different. It competes different. And I think that's also played against Josh Rosen this year.
Rosen has lost six games by at least 20 points. That is the most of any starting quarterback since 2018. Although, to everyone's point, he's been put in some tough spots. But that's the way it goes. Recapping the news from the last hour, Panthers head coach Ron Rivera confirmed Kyle Allen will start Sunday against the Titans. This is courtesy of Adam Schefter via Twitter. Bears head coach Matt Nagy leading quarterback Mitch Trubisky as Chicago's starter Sunday. They will play the Eagles. And Denver will start quarterback Brandon Allen against the Browns. This is because Joe Flacco has a back injury. Then this from Broncos reporter Jeff Legwold with additional clarification. Joe Flacco has a herniated disc. He told me in the locker room Sunday night he first felt like he did something 2 weeks ago and that he wasn't sure if he got hit there against the Colts. So a busy Monday afternoon regarding quarterback news. The Bears dropped their third straight game on Sunday. Eddie Pinheiro missing a 41-yard field goal as time expired. Chicago had 43 seconds on the clock and the ball at the 21, but chose to kneel and run timeout instead of trying to gain more yards. After the fact, Bears coach Matt Nagy spoke on the logic behind that decision.
I have zero thought of running the ball and taking the chance of fumbling the football or, you know, they know you're running the football, so you lose 3-4 yards. So that wasn't even in our process as coaches to think about that. You know, we were in field goal range before the scramble, and then we got the scramble. So that didn't even cross my mind.
No thought of throwing it there either?
Throw the football?
Yeah, just to try to get a little closer.
throw the football right then and there. What happens if you take a sack or there's a fumble?
You lose the game.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So no, there was zero thought of that. I'll just be brutally clear. Zero thought of throwing the football. Zero thought of running the football. You understand me? That's exactly what it was. So it's as simple as that.
We'll take it from there on Overreaction Monday. There is zero chance the Bears make the playoff.
This is not an overreaction. And when your post-game press conferences start to be shown on repeat, that's usually because you're losing. That's usually because you're saying something or answering questions you don't feel like answering, so you're peeved about them. And you say things like, I'm not an idiot. And you say things like, there was zero chance I was going to do certain things
that may have
helped me win the game. You look at this team. You're 3-4. You're at the bottom of the NFC North. Ahead of you are the Packers, the Minnesota Vikings, both of those teams playing extremely high-level football, and the Detroit Lions, who saved from a couple of bad calls, a tie in week one, is a different team from a schedule standpoint, but it's playing really good football. You have the Chiefs left. You got to play the Lions twice. You have the Packers. This is a team that has a really rough road down the stretch, and I know my literal friends are going to sit here
going there.
And talk
don't
about
literal, don't talk the literal.
And they're
going to
talk about the percentages. Right? The actual percentages. Well, I'm pretty sure that it wasn't 0%, Matt Nagy, that you were going to do anything. You just made a choice based on what you wanted to do, and you lost. And because of that loss to this team, in that way, they will not be in the playoffs, and they have zero chance of making it.
So you disagree, and you say Bears postseason, no go. Mort?
I really like Ryan. and he is
When Mort starts that way, you know where it's going.
He literally is a friend, and he's a great analyst. You are great on TV.
Here we go.
But there are mathematics involved here, 3-4. Now, I want to say something about Matt Nagy. Bill Parcells once told me this. He said, when you have a situation where you don't think your kicker can make a 45-yard field goal, then you need to get rid of that kicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they clearly thought Pinero could make this kick. And so I have no problem with the post press conference as I did yesterday. But they have a tough road to go. They still have that defense. They have a game that I think they can score some points. I thought Trubisky did play better yesterday. So I'm not going to wipe them out and say 0% chance. I think 2% chance.
All right. So it's not an overreaction. We put zero in the stick.
And I'm going to weigh in on the thing. Here's the deal. You run the football all the time when everyone knows you're going to run it. People do it every single week. The idea that you lose
and
three or four yards. Yes. The idea that you're going to lose 3 or 4 yards because you're running it when people know you're going to run it is wrong.
You ever heard of Joe Passard?
There would be no 4-minute drill in football if that were the case.
Exactly.
You know
right.
What I mean?
And so that's not correct. Now, you might not get any yards, but you also might rip off a 5-yard run,
right.
And then all
that
of a sudden
difference.
You end up making that kick. So I believe that they thought he would make it. I believe it was the wrong decision to kneel there. In terms of 0% chance, we're becoming way too predictable because Ryan knew we were getting literal on this.
I think he won.
They're not even at the halfway point. And as bad as their offense has been, and I don't think they're going to win the division, but as bad as their offense has been, they have a really good defense still. And if they can get it going just a little bit on offense, then they have a chance to make it in. I think it's too early. They're not just such a terrible team that they have to write off the season. So that's why I'm not putting them at 0% chance.
I have a question for you.
Ryan,
I have a question, okay?
If I wasn't so literal.
Like, so we're
okay,
all settling on
listen,
unlikely.
Listen, Lim. Right.
Lim.
So what we're looking at.
Literal tips.
So, okay, they're not going to win the North, right? So do you think they finish ahead of either the Vikings or the Bears?
And then
the Vikings or the Packers. And then you have to go to the West where there's the Seahawks. Hush, Mort. The Seahawks, the 49ers, and the Rams.
Yeah, but the Seahawks haven't been perfect. Obviously, you know, and the Rams have had their own issues as well. And so I think they're in the mix with those teams. Okay. I think they're in the mix with maybe that other team from the West.
Mort's like the kid in class who can't get it under control right now.
Excuse me.
So sorry. But
wait, I need a grown-up on the set with me. Because as long as I have to work with someone as immature and young as Mort is,
that's right.
We're not going to get good TV done.
I agree. Let's go.
All right, listen. On that note, we'll agree that the percentage is low, but maybe not zero.
Low, maybe not zero.
Not zero, except for Ryan over there. All right, the Bucs, the victims of another officiating controversy in Sunday's loss to the Titans. Tennessee punter Brett Kern appeared to fumble the ball in a field goal. At that point, Tampa returned it for a touchdown, but the play was whistled dead. Bucs head coach Bruce Arians did not mince words in his post-game press conference.
All right, obviously a very disappointing loss, the way we lost the game. To have a fumble, pick it up, run for a touchdown, and an inadvertent whistle, it's always tough. Like I said, the inadvertent whistle was a huge, huge play. You pick up a fumble, running for a touchdown to win the game, and it's not good.
Arians doubled down today and had this to say about the referees. My biggest thing is referees aren't held accountable. Coaches get fired. General managers get fired. Players get cut. Referees aren't accountable. And it's a shame. It's been that way for 40 years. And now that we've got a new agreement, it'll be that way for 40 more. Overreaction Monday. Let's tee it up. Referees are not held accountable. Ryan, is that an overreaction?
I don't believe it's an overreaction. And held accountable for me is about the how quickly it happens, how quickly you feel the need to be corrected, or how quickly you feel the punishment can be handed out to you. And in these cases, when a referee or an officiating flub messes up a win or a loss, or it puts you in a position to where it costs you a job, then the referee should feel the same thing. And I think that's what Bruce Arians means. These things are immediately impactful to football teams, immediately impactful to players. When you have something like that happens, now you have to go into post-game press conference and defend Jameis Winston. Whereas if you win this game, you can now talk about Mike Evans breaking a record, being historical. But you can't talk about those things because points were taken off of the board. And so when you're in the heat of it, as Bruce Arians is, or as some of these players are, you do feel like they aren't held accountable to the level that the players in the game are. And when someone is controlling sometimes the wins and losses, you wish that they were.
Yeah, I'll say it's an overreaction for me. I don't think Ryan is saying, you know, to the level that they need to be, you know, held accountable, because, you know, you can't grade an official on a win or a loss. The magnitude of a win or a loss as a player, as a coach in the NFL, is much bigger than it is, you know, from an official standpoint. But they are held accountable. You know, they are graded. It does affect guys. If your performance isn't up to par, you're not back. If you are, if you're not one of the best, you don't officiate the best games. You're not a part of those crews. And so, you know, it may not, it's not to the same level, but there is an accountability to it. It is a difficult position to be in, and it's difficult to officiate. I think where Bruce Arians really has a point is that there's a simple fix to this that was basically instructed to these officials.
Mm-hmm. Let it go.
And it's don't blow the whistle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like that part of it should not be difficult. And there were a lot of people when they were told to not blow the whistle that thought there are going to be some injuries that happen where some guys stop playing and other guys don't. And I know there were people on the competition committee and people in the PA that weren't thrilled about it, but it's probably the best thing in terms of determining a game because it costs the Bucs a game.
Yeah, we've seen this play before, like the Jaguars playing the Patriots, the AFC title game. Yeah. Remember Miles Jack returned that? Mm-hmm. They had blown a whistle. But officials are held accountable. But the problem is the NFL doesn't announce that they've benched an official or that they're suspending an official without announcing a suspension, or at the end of the year that they've actually fired officials. You see them rotate out. Now they have a new collective bargaining agreement between the National Referees Association and the NFL. And going forward, this accountability is going to go up at a higher level. But you can understand Bruce Arians' frustration.
Yes, but I think to that point about not announcing it, that's the right thing.
Yeah.
Yes,
you don't need every team knowing that you know, the guy that's barely passing is coming into town.
100%. Perception is reality. That's the last thing we need. This, though, already in the books. The Dolphins have sent running back Kenyon Drake to Arizona. Adam Schefter reporting Miami getting a sixth-round pick that could turn into a fifth-rounder. The Cardinals were shorthanded in the backfield with injuries to David Johnson and Chase Edmonds. And in advance of tomorrow's deadline, look who's here. We're going to see us. Ah, we are. Adam Schefter is here in the house.
He was looking at my phone when he broke that Kenyon Drake
story. He's cheating off your paper. Listen, it's going to be...
But I have nothing about Kenyon Drake on it.
By the way, Monday Night Countdown, a home game for you guys tonight. You will be here in Bristol, so it's our lucky day. We get to have you with us on this Overreaction Monday.
Our lucky day, Wendy. Our lucky day.
Yeah, let's overreact now.
An overreaction. It's our lucky day.
That's right.
All right, here we go. You remember this. I know you know how it's done, so I don't have to explain it. Chargers should trade Melvin Gordon, Shefty.
Not an overreaction. In the last year of his contract, they haven't won. Well, they won yesterday, but they hadn't won a game until yesterday since he's been back. They could get good value for him, I would think. And if you can get good value for him, why not move on from him? They have Austin Eckler. They have Justin Jackson. They have some other backs. If they could get something back for him, I would do it.
Yeah, and they're not going anywhere. He's averaging 2.5 yards a carry. He's getting stoned. Their offensive line is bad.
Yes.
This is a football team that, quite honestly, needs a bunch of assets. They might as well go ahead and see what they can get for him, because right now what they're doing is they're just getting him beat up. And right now I'm sure he's sitting every time he carries the ball sitting there going, I'm just getting beat up. Let me go somewhere where I can have a little bit of room to run.
Right. Not an overreaction, obviously. And they do have those other backs. I do think
he probably should not have taken the strategy that he did. You could say he protected himself and stayed healthy, but I think he would have flashed more right now, and his value would be up. But listen, they need to do something.
Yep.
They've got backs to replace them. They need some assets. They need to rebuild that offensive line yet again. And then it could become a pretty good football team.
Yeah, it's a recurring theme with them, isn't it? The offensive line, they throw assets at it. They invest in it. It doesn't pan out. They're one of the most hurt football teams in the NFL, seems like, every year.
Yes.
Across the board.
That's an interesting thought right
every
there.
Every year. Yeah. Exactly, which is a...
So,
that's not an
having said that,
but that's true.
Yes.
That is true. Having said that, though, since we all agreed he should be traded, Adam and Mort, any activity to that end?
No. There's not.
There you want to look at my
phone? There you go.
Check it out.
Yeah, let me look at it. Not that I've heard
of. We agree
fact,
there's no activity, and that's that.
And that there should be.
Yeah.
Well, no, right. So we're not overreacting and saying they should be traded, but you got to find a dance partner. There's none right now.
Yeah. Running backs, we've seen. You know, you get these guys in the third round if you really want them, the special ones. And so what would you give up for them? You'd probably offer a fifth or a sixth.
At this point.
And you should take it if you're the Chargers, sure. I think.
Kenyon Drake today went for basically a conditional sixth round draft choice. And Melvin Gordon.
The former first rounder.
He's been a great back. But how would another team value Melvin Gordon, if there's a team out
You know
there.
What? I think it's all relative to what is the state of your offensive line. Mm-hmm. You see in teams who have – the teams who are strongest up front are the ones who in November, December we see every year are the teams we're going to be talking about. And right now, what's the point if your team is built the wrong way and you have a bunch of nice perimeter players and you have nobody who you can move people up front?
Yeah.
It's just waste. You're just wasting these guys, and I think he's in that kind of situation.
All right, let's talk about the Chiefs for a minute. We won't talk about the fact that Patrick Mahomes was out last week. We'll see what happens there. But what about the defense? Should they trade? I'll say this. The Chiefs need to trade for defensive help. Mort, is that an overreaction?
It's not an overreaction. I actually thought they put a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers last night. But, you know, their linebackers, from everybody I've talked to, you know, they're not at the standard. But where do you get them? I would lay that up to Lewis at that point.
Yeah, look, I mean, that's a great question. Look, and they also played last night without Frank Clark and without Chris Jones.
That's
and
right.
They still were in it. The thing that happened to him last night, it's interesting. You know, like Matt LaFleur, for as much as people were getting on him, he saw something last night, right? He caught him in man situations, took the back and put him outside, and they were like, here, Anthony Hitchens, cover Aaron Jones one-on-one. That's not a trade for a player issue. That's a Steve Spagnuolo. You might want to help him out there when he's one-on-one. And Aaron Rodgers looking at it and going, I'm going to get you now. Now I'm going to make you pay. But there's no doubt they were trying to get a corner. They
Correct.
Need a corner. They could always use another one of those. And the upgraded linebacker, it's nice to want one. It's another thing to find
I will actually say this. Last night, everybody expected the Packers to win that game, right? I didn't talk to anybody who thought the Chiefs should win the game unless I didn't talk to you. What I'm saying is I thought Andy Reid and his staff did a heck of a job making this a very competitive game because the team is pretty hot.
Yeah, I mean, they got after them. You know, there was obviously, I mean, everybody watches the same stuff. There were certain things they let happen in that game that you know when you do with Aaron Rodgers, you're looking for an L. Mm. You let him escape up in the pocket and to his right, it's over.
Yes.
That pass he threw in the end zone, I mean, he's just ridiculous when he does that. And you saw it happen over and over. And this kid right here, I mean, Aaron Jones has become just ridiculous. In all phases of the game.
He's been playing lights out.
And, look, I mean, the Chiefs, we know they have thrown a lot of time and money at the defensive side of the ball. Again, they were down two of their best players last night. But even those guys, even Frank Clark in particular, they need much more out of him in the second half of the year.
I agree.
Shefty, overreaction for you?
Well, not an overreaction, just because of the fact that they did try to trade for Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
So if they run on Jalen Ramsey, why would they not want to try to get another cornerback if they could? The problem is there aren't a lot of cornerbacks out there. If you're Detroit, you'd want at least a one and then some for Darius Slay. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that anybody's going to meet that price from the Detroit Lions. So it's easy to say, yeah, the Chiefs need to trade for defensive help. It's another thing to actually go do it.
Can you tell me exactly why the Lions would be willing to trade Darius Slay?
Well, I think that he's been after a new contract, and I think maybe there could be an issue on the horizon.
Yeah.
It's not Darius Slay as a player that they're unhappy with. I think he's a good player.
Yeah.
But again,
I think he's a really good player.
Yeah, exactly. But before there's any issues.
I got you.
Well, I asked you about Melvin Gordon before, a different situation for A.J. Green since he's still not yet back on the field. But overreaction Monday, Bengals should trade A.J. Green. Overreaction, Shefty?
Not an overreaction. Here's a guy that's going into the last year of his contract. Probably going to be too pricey for them to franchise. Has had injuries. He's 31. They could probably get back a nice haul in return for a guy like A.J. Green. So to me, if you're Cincinnati and you haven't won a game this year and you got teams out there that would like A.J. Green. If you could get a good deal for him, yeah, it makes sense.
Oh, man, they said absolutely. I mean, who knows what Cincy's going to do? I mean, but yeah, think of A.J. Green and Eagle Green.
Oh, that. All I know that
that would look
all
nice.
I know is this. It's the Bengals and teams that have called them have basically been told nope.
Correct.
So why would the Bengals need assets to rebuild that team?
Of course.
What's their record this year?
Everyone yeah, that's what I'm saying. Oh, I mean, they do things in such, I mean, in, yeah, whatever. But the Eagles.
But
if they could get a guy like this,
what kind of haul would you,
any team.
What kind of haul would
you? Well, no, I'm just saying that team in particular who could really, hey, I mean, minus the
Sean Jackson. How about A.J. Green in Green Bay? How about A.J. Green in New England?
Okay, what would you give up for A.J. Green who's been injured the last year?
Sure, every team would be like, yes, yes, yes.
A two.
You'd give up a two, okay.
Would you give up a one from?
But I'm saying, like, the team that really needs a guy like that. I mean, really. They would sit there and go, you would actually say they're a good team. Now you're going, okay, now they're right in it maybe as a Final Four team in their conference. I mean, I don't know how you couldn't say Philly would use a guy like that. I mean,
how about Dallas?
Conditional with a physical. Dallas, are you saying that they're going
to? No. I'm just saying, when you say, where would
sometimes
A.J. Green,
you suggest
where, no, no, no. Where would A.J. Green fit? And I'm saying A.J. Green would fit
most
just
anywhere.
About anywhere.
Yeah. Right.
Any
that's
team
true.
In the league.
It's what you would
so
pay
true.
For that, to me.
With any playoff contender. San Francisco. Like any Ooh. Any playoff
every
contender.
Team gets better.
No, that's
Jeffy,
yeah.
Listen, I haven't seen you since I won a steak dinner. I bet on you for the Lambeau Leap.
He did not clear that.
My money was on you, and I won.
No,
you did
more.
Not.
What do you think your vert was that night?
It was a good inch.
They pulled your rear end up into the
doesn't
stand.
Matter.
A good inch.
He got
no, it
up
was,
there.
Yeah, you know what?
I
you
don't
see
care.
Me? You see me getting him hyped up?
Yeah.
And he ran
yeah.
over.
Yeah. See,
thank God for the
part of doing the Lambeau hop. Is being pulled by. I,
yes.
I wasn't counting on me.
No.
It wasn't just
doesn't
being
matter.
Pulled up.
It was
being hoisted. Hoisted.
It was a mission accomplished. Doesn't
would you do it?
Matter.
Would you do it?
Oh, heck yeah, I'll do it.
You think
let's
you
go
can do
right
it?
Now, I'll do it.
What's
do I
your
think
vertical?
I can do it?
What do you think your
I don't know.
Is?
I need some help, but he got help. Maybe not that much help, but.
That's true. I wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it? Oh, I'll do it. If I get an invitation, I will come Lambeau Leap.
I want to see it. Get it done.
All right, listen. These two will be back for Monday Night Countdown at 6 o'clock Eastern. They'll be right here as we get ready for the Steelers and Dolphins. Gentlemen, thank you.
Absolutely.
And we're looking forward to tomorrow. We're going to be out here a long time. Texans defensive end J.J. Watt confirmed on social media he is done for the year. This was after an injury in Sunday's win over the Raiders. He said he was gutted over the injury that appears to be a torn pectoral muscle, which he, of course, has dealt with before. It sounds like he'll have surgery, but we'll let Chris Mortensen add to that here in our Domino's pregame HQ. And it changes things for J.J. Watt, not only now, more, but probably next season as well.
Yeah, it's such an unfortunate injury, especially for a contending team. But J.J. Watt is going to be owed something like $27 million next year. It's not guaranteed money. So if he wants to stay with the Texans, they'll have to work out something that's very friendly and makes sense for both sides. Incentive based, obviously, on his appearances, roster bonuses, things like that. Or if he wants to explore the market, because if he wants to not play ball with the Texans, he can go play and say, hey, I want to go back to Wisconsin and try out Green Bay. But for the most part, his future in Houston is up in the air based off his contract.
Tough sledding.
And the injuries are. I mean, because of the injuries.
Well, tomorrow, we mentioned this, 4 o'clock Eastern, the trade deadline. The Eagles win yesterday. Are they buyers in this particular situation?
They are buyers. I mean, I think winning in Buffalo was a big deal. They went to 4-4. They're right there with the Dallas Cowboys competing there. They want to certainly get back and get into the playoffs and become a contender. They tried to trade first and a second round pick for Jalen Ramsey before. They're still on the market for a cornerback. They did make a trade that didn't blow up the Twitterverse today when they traded for Denard Avery from the Cleveland Browns, a former fifth-round pick from Memphis in 2018. He actually is an explosive young pass rusher that will work in well. They need some edge rushers there, so that's one trade. It's not the blockbuster, but I think Howie Roseman will stay aggressive.
All right, and lastly, the Buccaneers could be potentially shopping their former first-round pick, tight end O.J. Howard. What are you hearing?
Yeah, this is a former first-round pick and a guy who showed a lot of promise. But Bruce Arians himself, the coach of the Buccaneers, said that, you know, we don't plan on trading him, but, you know, if the price is right. Well, he says if the price is right, it means that they're open to it. Now, there's been a report that the Patriots had inquired about him. We know that they like tight ends.
We have 24 hours before we find out. In fact, he gets on the market. He didn't play yesterday because he was injured. But this is a guy, if you go with Bruce Arians in this history, in with tight ends, whenever he's ran an offense or been the head coach with an offense, the tight ends have a, you know, like a supporting role. They're not a featured role. So that's why I think that this, you keep an eye on this.
All right, keep an eye on that. Again, 4 o'clock Eastern. The Jets, by the way, got something done today. They send Leonard Williams to the Giants, and you have to wonder, is there anybody else the Jets may move before the end of the day tomorrow?
Yeah, and their first-year general manager, Joe Douglas, would like to get more commodities, certainly for the draft next year. Robbie Anderson, the vertical receiver, is somebody who's on the market, but he's also, his contract's up. And I've talked to one team that inquired and said he wants too much money for a new contract. So the Jets still are in business. And again, 24 hours to see if they do anything.
24, that's right. We're almost, what time is it? So 3:42. So almost exactly 24 hours from now to the NFL trade deadline. It was a banner day for the Bosa family on Sunday. Nick had 3 sacks and an interception, while older brother Joey added a pair of sacks himself. No brothers had ever combined for 5 sacks in a single week in NFL history. That was until yesterday. So how about this on Overreaction Monday? The Bosas will be the second best NFL family. Tim, is that an overreaction?
Who's
Tim
the first?
Hasselbeck. I don't know. Maybe the Hasselbecks.
Could be. This is an overreaction. I am not choosing myself, but you feel free to if you would like to.
I'll choose
the Hasselbecks, Wendy. I think the Matthews family.
I take it back. Sorry, I forgot about the Matthews.
God, Bruce Matthews, Clay Matthews, then their kids. I mean, listen, now, if the Bosa's going to have children that end up being players
like they are, we got to wait.
They have a chance there, but...
Well, you have a son that plays football.
I do.
And so does Matthew.
But we got a shot. And you know what? 187 career.
Clay Matthews.
But the Matthews is a good... That's a good call right there.
No, I mean, listen. Bruce and Clay are both in the Hall of Fame.
Yes. Clay's not quite, but he will get in.
Yeah,
Bruce Matthews is one of the great offensive linemen of all time. Are we sure that this isn't number one, though?
That's more of my argument.
Listen, when you
just
take,
because they're quarterbacks, Tim.
Oh, look, no, Tim's not going against quarterbacks.
When you take Archie Manning, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, they're number one. Archie Manning...
Archie Manning was the best athlete of the three.
He would have been in the Hall of Fame. He hadn't ended up with all those bad teams. Either way, they're number one. But the Bosas, I will say this. Their dad, John Bosa, played with the Dolphins. Okay, it wasn't a big-time career. But I will say this. What I've seen from Nick Bosa this year, we know Joey Bosa's been a big-timer. Yeah. You know, if Nick continues this ascent, but this is just a half a season. So it's pretty good.
Yesterday was such a good day for both of them.
Yeah.
That's why we're having this conversation.
These were
two dudes who just excelled. They were the cream of the crop of the one percenters in the world. And I think what Nick Bosa has done in recent weeks is amazing. You know, this is a guy who had to sit out most of his last year at Ohio State to get healthy. And he's changed this defense into something that is what none of us expected the San Francisco 49ers to be this year.
I would not criticize the Arizona Cardinals for taking Kyler Murray first.
Mm-hmm.
But Nick Bosa was there. And when the 49ers realized Kyler Murray was the pick, sprinted to the podium with the name of Nick Bosa.
I just thought of something.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You could be fourth.
People forget Don Hasselbeck, Matthew Hasselbeck.
They have a great one.
We got the Mannings. So we're gonna, we got the Bosas and the Matthews. So that's the top three, however you want to put them. And then I feel like we got the Hasselbeck.
There's Don Hasselbeck.
Look at
this.
Where's Tim?
We got to search deep for highlights.
How many wins you got between
187? Listen, my brother and I are second all time in terms of brother quarterbacks.
And
in wins. Okay.
We
have 187 combined. Now listen.
How many did Matthew have?
You have one, right?
Well, he had 186.
It is my favorite stat ever.
Teamwork.
I knew this.
Teamwork makes the dream
work, baby.
There you go.
Is your mom like, it's okay. Tim, you're good too.
Tim was good.
She actually knows too.
How many years were you in the NFL?
7 years.
That's a good career.
Hey,
that's a good career.
Off and on. Listen, Arcee knows how that feels.
You always pick LSU and everybody. Well, just you're our favorite because you're
top
here.
Top ten.
What do you mean I always pick LSU?
No, I mean, like, you're a homer. I think we should be a homer or a Tim.
Wow. I rock with Tim.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, Tim was my teammate.
Hey, teammates.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. See,
LSU is the number one ranked team by the AP right now in the country.
This show is totally off the road. I don't know what's going on.
Sounds of the Week is going to save us from this situation of which we have digressed. All right, all right, all right. We got one more game to go. Pittsburgh and Miami. Mort, what can you tell us?
Well, look, the Steelers got Mason Rudolph back. They need to find out if he's the guy. We assume Ben Roethlisberger is coming back, but what if he doesn't recover from that? So to me, he's got to start a run here where he convinces them he's the guy. Because they don't have a first-round draft pick next year. Mm. That went to the Dolphins for Minka Fitzpatrick.
Absolutely. We're picking?
We're picking. We're on the roll.
This is
going to
be so difficult.
Oh, please.
I'm going to go with the Steelers, though. I was back and forth on it.
Wants to be able to go
back. I didn't really know where I wanted to go. I'm going to go Steelers 27-17 because that's a score that's going to hit one day.
Such a homer. Yeah. Predictable.
I told you. See, that's why I picked you.
And that's why I'm going Steelers 23-10 because I think they could take a break. And I agree with Mort on finding out about Mason Rudolph, by the way. The reality is like, is this serious injury that Ben's trying to come back from at this point in his career? And so I think being able to evaluate Mason Rudolph is critical. What do you think?
I got the Steelers. I got to make it a clean sweep. I really do. I don't know what my score was at 24-14, but I just don't see Miami going into Pittsburgh and coming out with
magic.
The first win of the season.
Well,
but
going defense.
We've been wrong before. That's right.
We have never wrong, Wendy Nix.
No, never happened before. Listen, join us tomorrow for our trade deadline extravaganza.
Oh, yeah.